has enhanced it further, because it's empowered the disciplines that don't have residencies to be active in the educational process, like OB or PEDS. You know, the residencies are in medicine and surgery principally, but the other smaller departments, if they see a residency, it's because someone's doing it as part of a rotating internship, what we call them transitionals here. Otherwise, their contact with them had been trivial, but now they're all involved in the teaching of medical students. So everyone's, you know, gets to savor the enjoyment of being with these incredible students.
Mm. And you mentioned the medical school program. Yeah. You talk about students, both the residency program, which Bassett has had for a long time, but this medical school program, I was wondering if we could discuss how this came to be, or how this began.
Yeah. It's a fascinating story. The medical school program came up as an idea of Henry Wiles. It was his conception. And the reason for it, though, was something with which we all wrestled. And the problem was, we had great residents. We tended to retain internists either in primary care or as hospitalists. Sometimes specialists would come back. But our yield of retention from the residency was our richest source of recruitment for faculty that would come and stay than any others. But we didn't see that much with medical students. Medical students would come, they would come for a month, and then they would go back. And even if they had a wonderful time here, after they went back to the place from whence they came, I think that they'd forget about us. You know, or if they chose to go to New York, they chose a very urban medical school. And when they chose a residency, they didn't come to Bassett. Mm-hmm. So the idea was, could we, what kind of strategies could we come up with to have medical students come here and stay here longer? So Henry's idea, which, you know, was a very interesting idea, but didn't have much general support, was that we could become a medical school. And he and Bill Lacates, who just came back from Liberia 6 months, who is a nephrologist at the hospital, and Steve Hennigan, who was the chief of surgery, now is chief of professional services at the hospital, and I think the four of us, we went to Harvard Medical School and met with them, discussed our ideas with them. And the reason we went there instead of Columbia is because, you know, back in those days, Harvard would, they realized that their lectures were poorly attended. And so they would actually film all of their lectures and then put them online for their students to see, to audit offline. And they did that, and they did that very well. And so we knew that, and so we were wondering if we could audit those lectures. I mean, if we could work out an agreement with them whereby we could use their lectures for the preclinical years, and we just didn't have the faculty for that. They just weren't here. We couldn't afford to hire a faculty. Then we would have the clinical faculty here who could take those lectures and, with small groups of students, make them clinically relevant and discuss their content. And then we could teach the clinical disciplines here. Well, for a number of reasons, you know, that idea just didn't go anywhere. Our board didn't support it. The Columbia part of our board didn't like our working with Harvard, understandably so. And the impracticality of having remote learning in your first year and a half or 2 years after we had really looked into it didn't really make any sense. So still, our goal remaining, getting students to come and stay here longer, we felt, you know, even if they just came for their clinical training here, that would be 1 to 2 years. That's a long time. And that's enough to perhaps have someone, you know, imprint themselves and want to come back. So we put together this clinical program with a different kind of a model, the longitudinal model that you probably have read about, which was developed at Harvard and which we studied and which they use for about 15 students in their class at the Cambridge City Hospital. And we felt that we could do that here and do that pretty well and put it together in a way that really demonstrated its feasibility. And that generated a lot of interest from a lot of schools. All of the schools were under pressure to expand their classes, especially to expand their classes for primary care, because primary care was in such short supply. And so we had as really interested schools, Vermont, Rochester, Albany, Syracuse, all of whom came here with their deans to look at this program, a school in Australia. And then the dean of the American Association of Medical Colleges, who's a very powerful person. Columbia's level of interest was minimal. They came and looked at it. And, you know, really was not very interested in our program. And then, you know, we were really advancing probably to working this out with Vermont when Columbia suddenly got very interested. And they got very interested in part because the president of the AAMC really thought this was the real thing and that it looked like a Columbia affiliate hospital was going to be lost to some of their competitors, you know, for what appeared to be a good reason that maybe they should take a second look at it. And our board has so many Columbia people on it, including the chairman, who was an advocate, who then became an advocate of this program. He wasn't at first. That we were encouraged is a mild word. A relationship with Columbia was the one that was, we were told, was the one that was going to have to happen. So we did that. And while that was, so details had to be worked out. Like Columbia wasn't crazy about this being a primary care oriented program. It had to be for students to do anything they wanted. And so we had to modify it to that degree. And while those details were being worked out, and I'm probably repeating some of what you've read, it took a while. And then even after the agreement was worked out, before we'd see a student here, it would be 2 years. You know, we had to recruit, and then we had to find students, and they had to be in New York for a year and a half before they came here. Here we had trained our faculty, gotten a mission statement going, we were ready to go, and Albany was really, Albany oversubscribed a class. In medical school, what they do is they typically invite more students than they have positions for, because they know that they're competing with so many others that, you know, they don't get, if they offer 100 positions, they might get 50. So they offer 150. Well, Albany ended up with, I think, 7 or 8 more students than they had room for. It's not a problem in the first 2 years where it's all classroom learning, but it's a problem in the next 2 years where you need to be taught at the bedside. So they knew about our program and they asked us if we would teach 7 of their students. And so we said, sure, which 7? And they said, well, come on up here and you know, describe your program to the second year class and see if you get 7 volunteers. So we did. And we had twice as many, well, you know, we had more than that. So they ended up picking the 7. So we did that with 7, and that worked out so well that the next year they weren't oversubscribed, but we still had a year without students here, and we had done it for a year. They asked us to take 12. So we did that. And that was tough, to do 12 with the size of our faculty. We did it. And we did it well, and the students loved it. But we learned that 12 was more than we could handle with our current faculty. And by that time, we were with Columbia. There was a Columbia Bassett program. We had picked the first year class, but they were in New York. So we had another year without students. So we took another group, I think, of 8 mm-hmm. in the third year. And that was the last year with Albany. So that was a 3-year pilot, which for us was fabulous faculty development. It enabled us to put together the SLIM curriculum and put structure into it and get a faculty involved in the lectures and how to organize that with seminars. And then the next year, the first Columbia Bassett class came here. So that's how it all came to be.
Yeah. It's truly an interesting story, and I want to mention we're coming up a little bit on time here, okay. So I just want to ask one thing here that relates to an earlier point you made. You said that in your experience at Columbia, it was a kind of a stressful experience when you were in medical school, and then when you went to Michigan for your residency, it seemed much more communal. How did those experiences influence what you wanted to achieve with the Columbia Bassett program?
Excellent question, and a very important point, because I wanted to achieve that culture here. Mm-hmm. And I think it exists here.
Yeah. Could you elaborate a little bit on that? We have a little bit of time.
Okay.
Where we could.
Well, I think that the residents here and the faculty are very supportive of each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, part of that is the group practice. You share things. Our cancer treatment center has radiation oncologists and medical oncologists and surgical oncologists. Sharing care. There isn't any economic competitiveness among them. I mean, there's a climate of collaboration. But among the residents, they all study for their boards together. When I in the earlier years before things became really more complicated, our conferences used to have all of the members of the Department of Medicine and the residents coming together to the same conference at lunchtime with their brown bags in the same room. Now, there are far too many of us to do that. Now we have to go to a major auditorium. But we were able to do that. So I think it's not quite as intimate as it was when it was smaller. Mm-hmm. And I relate that more to size than to culture. But I think that the culture of mutual respect, support, and understanding and affection is present here. Mm-hmm. And I think educators in general recognize the value of that humanism in not just the practice of care, but the treatment of peers. And I think organizations, monitor that too. They're much more sensitive to monitoring abuse, when people do go astray, and some do, and dealing with it when that happens.
I think we're... I think we have time for probably just one more question from me.
Sure.
And what I kind of want to ask is this brings in a lot of different things. You were at Bassett for 42 years. And you've lived in Cooperstown for that amount of time. And you started this program and you served as chief of staff. And you did all these things at this one place. What has it meant for you to... work at Cooperstown for these 42 years and to be here in this area?
Well, for me, it was kind of like coming home, But the whole first part of my life was just going from port to port to port to port. This has represented stability and security. And, now in my retirement, I'm discovering much more about the community that I never had an opportunity to tap into because of my work. Mm-hmm. Things that are being offered at the museum, lecture series, movies, talks at the library, courses that are being given at SUCO, and there's an adult education. There's just a lot of different things both Linda and I have now become involved with that we didn't appreciate. We thought that we were going to be leaving Cooperstown once I retired to go and live in the Perry, Boston area where one of our kids lives, and there are two of our grandchildren are still in high school there. Our two here are now both in college. But, we've decided to stay, and we've discovered that everything that we would have been looking for there is here. You know, so the only thing we don't have is a proximate airport.
Oh, that's a problem for everyone in this area. I think I'm about set. Is there any other points that you'd like to add?
No, I think you've covered a lot of ground.
Well, then I want to thank you again for
interviewing.
Thank you very much.